Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So before I get into the words of welcome, I know that church necessarily isn't always thought of as a fun place, but I'll tell you what would make this 4:30 service more fun for me, since it's really about me and my needs. No, it's not at all. But if some of you in the way back or even in the middle back or even in the kind of up front, kind of close area wanted to move even farther up, it would be incredible. It would be astonishing. The energy we would create, the vibe that would fill this place. Think of it as a gift to yourself and a gift to Dick Bugs and I. And thank you all. Because when we sing together, it'll sound better. And when we laugh together, we'll laugh more heartily. And when we, you know, cry, we'll weep with company. So thank you all. So we'll take it from the top again. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
It's wonderful to be here with you, and I especially want to extend a welcome if you're here for the first or the second time worshiping with us. We hope that you find Unity Church to be a place which nourishes and balances you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. After this afternoon service, you're invited to join us in the parish hall for refreshments and fellowship. There are a number of tables there available for you to check out, including our welcome table for more information about Unity Church and membership. Our libraries, our children and adult libraries, are also open after every service and available to you. I would draw your attention to the insert in your order of worship, the This Week at Unity. It highlights events coming up in the following week, including our Wellspring Wednesday program. Dinner is at 6, a short chapel service follows, and then classes begin at 7:15. Our featured speaker this Wednesday is Stephanie Kanunen, founder of Need Magazine. There are free copies of that magazine available at the Wellspring Wednesday table. I also want to let you know if you ever miss a sermon for some reason at Unity Church, it happens occasionally to all of us. Many of you know this, but you can listen to it online. We've been podcasting for the past several months, so if you miss something, check it out online. And this is not a, I'm not giving you permission to miss and then just go check it out online. We still want you here in person. The Wellspring Wednesday cooking team would love volunteers this Tuesday evening after 6 o'clock to help prepare honey cakes and other things for the Passover meal this Wednesday. So if you're interested in helping with that, please come here at 6 tomorrow, or Tuesday evening. Next Sunday, after each of the services, we'll have an Easter egg hunt in the green space. They will follow the 9 and 11, and then it'll happen at 4 before the 4:30 service. So if you have children and they might be interested in the Easter egg hunt, know that that will happen. The children and youth choirs from All Souls Church in Tulsa will be here 2 weeks from today. This is the church I worked at for 5 years before coming here. Their choirs will be performing in our services on the 15th, and the children and youth who are coming up and their chaperones are in need of homestays. So if you might be able to open your home for one of them, there's a sign-up sheet out in the parish hall, or you could talk to Ruth or me about that. In your This Week at Unity, you'll notice that David Corton is speaking in a Morgan Forum here April 14th. He's a wonderful speaker. I encourage you to come to that. And if you're interested in the Transylvania trip to our partner church in Romania, the deadline for that, for making that initial deposit and filling out the registration form, is April 15th. And I'd be happy to talk to you more about that if you're interested in going. Finally, there's another sign up. This is a lot of announcements. It won't be this long next Sunday, I promise. There's a sign up sheet in the parish hall for Project Home. May is the month that Unity Church, in conjunction with other churches, offers its space and its building in the evening for families that do not have space in the Ramsey County Family Service Center when that place is at capacity. So if you're interested in helping with that, there is a sign-up sheet as well. And just a final reminder that cards are available for free at the pastoral care table when people are mentioned in the Embracing Meditation. If it's someone you know or someone you'd like to drop a line to of condolence or celebration, whatever it might be, if you fill out one of those cards, we'll mail it on your behalf to that person. So those are at the care team table. And then next Sunday, Teresa Schwartz and I will lead our Easter service. Services are at 9, 11, and 4:30. And finally, at the conclusion of this service, Dick Buggs and I would love to joyfully greet you at the Portland Avenue doors. Once again, welcome to Unity Church.
Wow, thank you. She doesn't speak yet, but she's taught me a great deal already. She's my first, now 10-month-old granddaughter, and she would go crazy with what the prelude that was just sung for us. Last week I was down visiting her, and I took her out of a little jumping chair that hangs in the doorway, you know, and I put her on the floor, and I pushed the button for the CD player, and she instantly got up on her knees. A radiant smile colored her face. She put her little booty up in the air, and she started shaking to the music. "Oh, how cute," said everybody in the room. In that moment, I knew two things for sure. Had I been the one on the floor with my knees and shaking my booty, I don't think they would have said, "Oh, how cute." But I also knew in that moment that shaking to the music, which can take so many manifestations, it assumes so many forms, shaking to the music. Perhaps that ought to become a daily spiritual practice if we, each of us, is to live a less deformed and more gracious life. Come, let us worship together. Please read with me now the responsive reading as printed in your order of service. Remember the sky you were born under. Know each of the stars' stories.
Remember the moon. Know who she is. Remember the sun's birth at dawn. That is the strongest point of time. Remember sundown and the giving away to night.
Remember your birth. How your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You are the evidence of her life and her mother's and hers.
Remember the earth whose skin you are. Red earth, black earth, yellow earth, white earth, brown earth. We are earth.
Remember the plants, trees, animal life, who all have their tribes, their families, and their stories too. Talk to them. Listen to them. They are alive poems.
Remember the wind. Remember her voice. She knows the origin of this universe. Remember you are all people, and all people are you. Remember you are this universe, and this universe is you.
Remember all is in motion, is growing, is you. Remember, language comes from this. Remember the dance language is, that life is. Remember.
Every Sunday when we gather, we set aside time to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together, we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this sacred place. This afternoon, we celebrate the life and mourn the death of Betty Solo, sister of Nancy Solo Taylor. Betty passed away last Tuesday, and her memorial service was held here yesterday. Let us keep Nancy and her family, James, Jessica, and Molly, in our prayers. Let us also hold in our prayers Karen Pike, who has been recently diagnosed with cancer. And our thoughts this afternoon are with members of Unity Church, who will soon be returning from the work they've been doing in New Orleans, rebuilding and gutting homes. May they return to us safely. This is also a time of celebration, and this afternoon we celebrate with Lynn Burton, who has just recently passed the Ministerial Fellowship Committee as she prepares for ministry in our Unitarian Universalist Association. Our prayers are also with Alexia Whitecrow, whose grandfather recently passed away. Let us keep all of these people and their joys as well as their sorrows and hurts in our prayers this afternoon. Our hearts are also with all of those who live with grief or chronic pain, with illnesses seen and unseen, those who live with addiction, those who live with mental illness, those who care for family members in ill health, and those who knowingly face their final days with dignity and courage. May we stand in compassionate solidarity with our neighbors all around the world who suffer in the midst of habitual violence. May they and we be instruments of a lasting peace. I now invite you to share the names of those you would like to celebrate, remember, memorialize, or bring into the embrace of this community. For the names which have been spoken and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, may we be forever grateful for the lives that have touched ours. And let us pray. Source of love and life, despite the pain and grief and fear that so often moves through our lives, we give thanks for being. Despite our racing minds and our unfinished to-do lists, we give thanks for being here. Despite the challenges, heartbreaks, and hard work of being in community, we give thanks for being here together. In gratitude we pray. Amen. This afternoon's offering will go to the Stepping Stone Youth Theater, which is a nonprofit organization actually relocating right in our neighborhood at the end of Holly and Victoria in that building. They'll be in there by the end of the summer, I believe it is. And this organization actively engages children and youth in the creative and expressive powers of theater. So I hope that you will be generous with your resources this afternoon as we now receive our offering. Will the ushers please come forward? Will the ushers please come forward? May this offering be a blessing and a gift to those that receive it.
Our first reading this afternoon is from the black Native American, actually, poet, Sherman Alexie. The reading is called The Summer of Black Widows. The spiders appeared suddenly after that summer rainstorm. Some people still insist the spiders fell with the rain, while others believe the spiders grew up from the damp soil, like weeds with eight thin roots. The elders knew the spiders carried stories in their stomachs. We tucked our pants into our boots when we walked through fields of fallow stories. An Indian girl opened the closet door and a story fell into her hair. We lived in the shadow of a story trapped in the ceiling lamp. The husk of a story museumed on the windowsill. Before sleep at night, we shook our blankets and stories fell to the floor. A story floated in a glass of water on the kitchen table. We opened doors slowly and listened for stories. The stories rose on hind legs and offered their red bellies to the most beautiful Indians. Stories in our cereal boxes. Stories on our firewood. Stories in the pockets of our coats. We captured the stories and offered them to the ants who carried stories back to their queen. A dozen stories per acre. We poisoned the stories and gathered the remains with broom and pan. The spiders disappeared suddenly after that summer lightning storm. Some people still insist the spiders were burned to ash, while others believed the spiders climbed the lightning bolts and became a brand new constellation. The elders knew the spiders had left behind bundles of stories. Up in the corners of our old houses now, we still find those small white bundles and nothing, neither fire, nor water, nor rock, nor wind can bring them down. Our second reading is a collection of short readings. I say to you, return then, fly home, your feathered wings outstretched, for you have escaped the cage. Abandon your stagnant pool for the running waters of life. Rumi.
So, friends, every day do something that won't compute. Laugh. Be joyful, even though you have considered all the facts. Be like the fox who makes more tracks than necessary, some in the wrong direction. Wendell Berry.
I wouldn't mind being a rose in a field of roses. Fear has not yet occurred to them, nor ambition. Reason they have not yet thought of. Neither do they ask how long they must be roses, and then what, or any other foolish question. Mary Oliver.
Trickster has many names, Coyote, Mercury, Hermes, and more. Trickster is the creative idiot, the wise fool, the gray-haired baby, the cross-dresser. Trickster is the embodiment of ambiguity and ambivalence, doubleness and duplicity, contradiction and paradox. Lewis Hyde.
You have woken up late, lost and perplexed. Don't rush to your books for knowledge. Pick up your flute and let your heart dance. Rumi.
Oh, I got a zoo. I got a menagerie inside my ribs, under my bony head, under my red valve heart, and I got something else. It is a man-child heart, a woman-child heart. It came from God knows where. It is going to God knows where. For I am the keeper of the zoo. I come from the wilderness. Robert Frost.
If I am suspicious of my body and believe that feelings must be severely disciplined, the chances are that I will be sympathetic with a social order in which law and order are the highest values. Law rather than novelty, necessity rather than possibility will be seen as dominant. Sam Keen.
That's for sure. Too often, mindless manipulation of what is substitutes for the art of living. Human beings are on earth to share being, to fall ever more deeply in love with being. Matthew Fox.
Good afternoon. I know I can feel you getting nervous. You're saying that woman is at the piano and she's going to ask us to sing. You're exactly right. Will you turn to hymn 368? We have been invited by our leaders today to enjoy the music and feel free and exuberant and to have fun with the music, and we're going to do that together. So I'm going to ask three of our quartet to come on up to help with that. We have Teresa and Nick and Jeff. And I'm going to ask you to help facilitate this, to stay seated, if that's all right. But I want you to feel as if you're singing standing up, all right? I'm going to ask my quartet if you would back up just a little bit so I can see these folks over here. I have to keep all of the singers in my eye here. All right, if you'll look at the music briefly, you'll see we have basically two parts here. The one that sings on the top line of the music and the one that sings on the bottom line of the music. How many of you have sung this before? Good, at least three. We're off to a good start. Okay, so here's what we want to do. I'm going to ask Nick, our bass, to sing through that bottom line for us. And you'll kind of observe here that there's really only one word that's going to change in all of these verses. If you look down at the bottom, at the first verse, we're sing to the power of the faith within, and then sing to the power of the hope, sing to the power of the love, and sing to the power of the joy. So basically, we can almost start to work off of the music very soon. So I have a job for you, though, as Nick is singing. If you will please look to the very end of the music at his last three words, where right before that he has, sing to the power of the faith within. Just to get the feel of that rest, we're all going to clap right before faith, all right? So you can all get ready to do that. Nick, here we go. And as he's singing this, you could be considering, is this going to be one of the parts I'm going to claim to sing, or do I want to do the other one? Here we go. Okay, Nick, one, two, three. Nick, would you take it right from the end? Sing to the power of the, and will you all get ready for faith within? Here we go. Nick, right at the end there, ready, and. You are fantastic. Okay, have courage. Those of you, in fact, why don't you all give it a try? Let's sing that part through with Nick, and then you can decide if that's the one that feels good for you. Here we go. One, two, three. All right, fantastic. I am very encouraged. That's excellent. How many of you think you're comfortable singing that part? Raise your hands. Good. Oh, very nice. Okay, excellent. All right, let's go to the top part. Now, because this bottom part kind of gives us a cue as to when we're coming in, I'm not going to ask you to sing it, but I'm going to very quietly play it on the piano so the top part has the feeling of when you enter. Okay? So Teresa and Jeff are going to help with that. Here we go. So we have one. There you go. Okay, let's try that one. Will you join with them on that? Just the top line. Get those claps going. One, two, three. Okay, I think we're ready to tour. So, how many of you would like to take that top part? Good, good, good. Okay, Dick is not going to be held down here. He's got that top part. Let's do it. Now, the trick is that for those people singing the bottom part, you barely get to breathe, and we go right back to the beginning for the second, third, and then fourth verses, okay? So, no mercy. Buckle up your seatbelts, and here we go. Get those claps ready. One, two, three. Wonderful. Thank you.
So you just learned a new song, which was great. I thought we did well, and next time we'll really rock out on that song. But I want to teach you some important words at this point in time, words that have deep meaning and deep power. Owa.
Owa.
Tagu.
Tagu.
Siam.
Siam.
Ever since we've been born, ever since we became aware of our existence, we've wrestled with the questions, what am I? Who am I? What is the purpose of my life? And I think these words might offer a clue to help us unlock that question. Owa.
Owa.
Tagu.
Tagu.
Siam.
Siam.
So I want you to really feel the power of the words and have everybody here join in me with this, all right? Let's do it again a little faster this time. Owa. Tagu. Siam. Faster, faster. Owa. Tagu. Siam. Owa. Tagu. Siam. Owa. Tagu. Siam. Oh, what a goose I am. Oh, what a goose I am. Oh, what a goose. Honk, honk. Oh, what a goose I am. Honking and flapping up here madly. Indeed, what silly geese we all are at times as we seek to make sense of life and those questions. And I invite you the next time you're stressed out or feeling a bit too serious, repeat or have someone else near you repeat, Owa, Tagu, Siam. And maybe it'll give you some perspective on your situation, or at least provide for some entertainment, if nothing else. And if you're here for the first time, I do need to let you know that not every service at Unity begins or is quite like this one. Today is April Fool's Day. And as author Wes Nisker says, we live in a world of too much seriousness, and much of our serious behavior is simply ritualized and rationalized nonsense. Thus, we need April Fools, and fools in general, such as the Zen master who asks his students, "Where can I find a man or a woman who has forgotten words? I would like to have a word with them." And we need madmen such as Lao Tzu and the Buddha and Jesus, all challengers to conventional truth, all masters of the foolish, all willing to call us and themselves silly geese. They make the wise seem foolish, and the foolish seem wise. These fools, these so-called fools, play with us and expand our minds with their foolishness and their parables. They dismantle our idols of seriousness and certainty, and they play to shake us out of our view of a set reality. Speaking of play, how many of you here have heard of the game? I know it as Hink Pink. No one? Oh, a few people know the game. A couple people know the game Hink Pink. It's a rhyming game. You think of two words that rhyme, and then you make up a clue about them. So for example, fat cat, we'll start with that. That's a simple one. So each word is one syllable, so it's a hink pink. If each word was two syllables, it would be a hinky pinky. Are you with me on this? Okay. And if it was three syllables, it would be a hinkity pinkity. And I had someone after the 11 o'clock service say, well, what if it's four syllables? What do you do then? And they came up with this. I thought this was really good. It's a hinkadoodle, is what they said. So if it's a four-syllable one, it's a hinkadoodle. So back to fat cat. It's a hink pink, and the clue for that would be an overweight feline. So you think to yourself, overweight feline. Oh, okay, fat cat. All right. So here's another one I want to share with you, and it's a visual clue. It's a hinky pinky, and the clue is a fruit that belongs in a small place of worship. You can answer this when you think of it. Chapel apple, that's right, a chapel apple. And I have another one, speaking of worship, it's a hink pink, and it's a hymn that goes on and on and on. Long song. We got some quick people in the back pews back there. And I'm glad that we're having fun and laughing a little bit here, because despite our intention to have fun in our places of work or with our friends or with our family, it's alarming the amount of time we spend being serious. And I would argue that that's not actually the nature of who we are, that we are, in fact, built for play and for fun and for creativity. And if you're not so sure, think of it this way. The universe, which we are an intimate part of, has been playing, if you will, for 15 billion years. Ever since the Big Bang, the universe has playfully and magically unfolded as galaxies, as stars, as planets. And ever since our planet, our particular planet, formed about 4 billion years ago, the sun's energy has playfully interacted with our planet. And such things as grass and geraniums and giraffes and dinosaurs and human beings and me and you have come into being. So I call this life force, this creative force in the world, I call it godly play. Because at the heart of the universe, there does seem to be this tendency toward creativity, toward diversity, toward playfulness. A loving force at work, perhaps, asking, what could we try here? What new life could I bring, could we bring, could be brought into being? And if you're still not convinced about this idea of godly play, I will share this story with you from the Institute for Play. On a late October day on the Canadian tundra, next to the cold but unfrozen Hudson Bay, it looked like a beautiful young husky was about to become one dead
dog. Hudson, the name of this particular husky, was comfortably lounging in a bed of fresh snow, tethered on a long chain. And then suddenly, out on the white horizon, there appeared a 1,200-pound male polar bear, a very hungry polar bear. You see, biologists had been tracking this polar bear and others in the area, and they had observed that this bear and the other ones had not eaten for nearly 4 months because the ice had not yet formed on the bay, and the bears could not hunt their favorite meal, which were seals. So as the bear moved toward Hudson, who obviously had never been warned about hungry polar bears, he didn't try to flee or bare his teeth or howl in terror. Instead, Hudson the dog wagged his tail, grinned a big doggy grin, and crouched in a bow to the bear, signaling an invitation to play. And I know that those of you who have dogs, and maybe even those of you who don't, have seen this. When a dog wants to play, they go down like that, and it's a clear signal of let's play. Here's the amazing part. As the biologists later observed photos taken of this event, they saw that as the bear approached Hudson, the bear itself also indicated its desire to play through this loose, sort of shambling walk, through a playfully inviting gesture and facial expressions. So within seconds, this enormous bear and what you might call North America's luckiest dog were wrestling and cavorting in the snow in front of the cameras of these incredulous scientists. At one point, the bear wrapped himself like a white wool comforter around Husky in an embrace. And over the next 2 weeks, this bear returned a number of times to play until the ice formed on the bay and he was able to hunt a seal meal, a Hank Pink, for those of you keeping track. So this desire to play seems to be at the heart of things. But you wouldn't guess that. You wouldn't guess that from the seriousness of most religion. Thanks in part to our Puritan ancestors and their roots in this strong work ethic, play has more negative connotations than it does positive. Clearly, this is not the case when we're young. But as we age, we only play after work and the to-do list is completed. Unless, of course, we're around a young child, at which point we all revert to these silly people who play peekaboo and I see you and all this stuff. Children bring that out in us. But in many ways, play is not a priority. And I think organized religion has done a pretty good job of putting the kibosh on fun and play with its threats of hell and with its heavy dogma. So I've created a hinkety-pinkety, this is three syllables here, a hinkety-pinkety to honor this dark side of religion. The clue is a scary or frightening clergy person. Sinister minister, you got it. And I would argue that these sinister ministers should be charged with the high crime of another hinky-pinky, of using the holy scriptures in a slanderous way to hurt the reputation of another. Bible libel. You got it. Bible libel. So it is the holy fools, the divine mad men and mad women who keep these sinister ministers and the Bible libelists at bay, reminding us not to take ourselves too seriously. And as author Anne Lamott, who is a holy fool in her own right, in my estimation, reminds us, as she says, no one on their deathbed says, I wish I'd have worked more and harder. And I wish I'd stayed a couple nights every week later at the office. No. That's not what they say. They say, I wish I would have played more. I wish I would have been with people I love more. I wish I would have enjoyed games and activities with my friends and children and babies. So my advice to you is if you're feeling stressed and discombobulated, it might be play, not more work that recombobulates you. I just made that word up. It seems reasonable to be recombobulated if you're discombobulated. In fact, speaking of this play and the power of play to give you a new perspective on your environment and on your reality, there's an anecdotal story told about a summit back in the mid-80s between Prime Minister Gorbachev and President Ronald Reagan. The summit wasn't going well, and they had failed to reach any sort of agreement on nuclear disarmament. Despite this, they said, we'll have a final breakfast together and then go our separate ways. So they came together for breakfast, and Reagan began telling American jokes, which were reciprocated by Russian jokes. And everyone was delighted and amused and laughing at these jokes. Reagan told the one about an old Russian woman who goes into the Kremlin and who gets an audience with Gorbachev and says to him, in America, anyone can go into the White House, walk up to Reagan's desk, and say, I don't like the way you are running the country. And Gorbachev replied, you know, you can do the same thing in the Soviet Union. You can go into the Kremlin, walk up to my desk, and say, I don't like the way Reagan is running his country. And just like you all, people were busting up and laughing. At least that's how the story goes. So they swapped jokes and laughed together, and at the end of that meal, no business had been discussed, but at the end of that meal, they said, let's continue the summit. And they came eventually to an agreement and had some resolution, and it was ultimately a successful summit. There were many factors to that, of course, but I think to emphasize the power of play would be a mistake. So what does this mean for us, for our lives, for what we do today? Well, it seems to me that for humans and for others, play can be a universal training course that builds trust. And an immediate example is at the beginning of this service when I asked you, I sort of implored you, I said, would you please come forward? I mean, that's something of trust. We were in a relationship starting to play, but because you're all up here, I get more of your energy, and then I have more energy to share with you. And so that's the beginning of a playful sort of trust that we're building. If you feel safe enough to play with another, then over time, a deeper trust is formed. Trust builds intimacy, cooperation, and creativity. It can work between nations, coworkers, spouses, family members, neighbors, or even pets. And you know, the funny or not so funny thing is, we've got the war and the work ethic down really well. We know how to work hard and we know how to fight pretty well. But maybe what we really need, as author Joseph Meeker suggests, is a play, a national or a global play ethic. Something that reminds us of the importance of play, that the point of play is to play. And in play, everyone can be equal and roles can change. The rules are negotiable from moment to moment. And play produces strength and new skills for the players, and it stimulates the imagination. An example might be a soccer game. Imagine an intergenerational family meeting on a field to play soccer together. Bigger members of the family slow down. Little ones are given a chance. All sorts of boundaries and rules are changed in order to play together. A play ethic that encourages mutual playfulness and creativity might help us respond in a whole new way to the failures and the challenges and the tough decisions that are a part of every life. And surely, with 6 billion people and counting, as we face unprecedented challenges and opportunities in our global community, play is what the world needs badly. So I say to the clowns and the pranksters and the jokesters and the fools from all over the world, Owa Tagu Siam, bring it on. We're ready for creative play, for holy play, for godly play. Let's play. Amen.
So, as you leave this place of worship and continue with your lives outside of this place, may you care for one another, may you love one another, and may you play with one another.
Woo!
May it be so, and amen.
Go to it.